Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Vicor earnings results for the second quarter ended June 30th, 2014. My name is Sarah, and I'll be your operator for today. At this time, all participants are in listen-only mode, and later we will conduct a question-and-answer session. If at any time you do require operator assistance, just press star zero, and I'll be happy to assist you. Just as a reminder, this conference is being recorded for replay purposes. I would now like to turn the conference over to James Simms, CFO, and Dr. Patrizio Vinciarelli, CEO.
Thanks, Sarah. Good afternoon, and welcome to Vicor Corporation's conference call for the second quarter ended June 30th, 2014. I'm Jamie Simms, CFO, and with me here in Andover are Patrizio Vinciarelli, Chief Executive Officer, and Dick Nagel, Chief Accounting Officer. As we always have, we issued a press release today summarizing our financial results for the second quarter. This press release is available on the investor page of our website, vicorpower.com. We also have filed a Form 8-K with the Securities and Exchange Commission in association with issuing this press release. I remind listeners this conference call is being recorded and is the copyrighted property of Vicor Corporation. I also remind you various remarks we may make during this call may constitute forward-looking statements for purposes of the safe harbor provisions under the Private Securities Litigation Reform Act of 1995. Our forward-looking statements are subject to risks and uncertainties that may cause actual results to differ materially from those explicitly set forth or implied in our statements. Such risks and uncertainties are discussed in our most recent Forms 10-K and 10-Q filed with the SEC. Please note the information provided during this conference call is accurate only as of the date of the call. Vicor undertakes no obligation to update statements made during this call, and you should not rely upon them after the conclusion of this call. A replay will be available beginning at midnight tonight through August 6th, 2014. The replay dial-in number is 888-286-8010, and the listener passcode is 49359584. In addition, a webcast replay of the conference call will be available on the investor relations page of our website beginning shortly after we conclude today. I will start this afternoon's discussion with a review of our financial performance for the second quarter and the first half, and Patrizio will follow with his comments, after which we will take your questions. As set forth in this afternoon's press release, Vicor recorded a net loss for the first quarter of $4.8 million, representing a net loss rounded up to $0.13 per share on revenue of $53.4 million. For the first quarter of 2014, we recorded a net loss of $5.4 million, or $0.14 a share, on revenue of $53.2 million. For the first half of 2014, we recorded a net loss of $10.2 million on revenue of $106.6 million, while for the first half of 2013, we recorded a net loss of $9.6 million on revenue of $88.8 million. This increase in revenue represents year-over-year growth of 20%. Consolidated revenue for the second quarter rose less than 1%, but there were meaningful shifts in the makeup of total revenue. In reporting $53.4 million, we actually exceeded our prior quarter's guidance of $52 million. The brick business unit recorded a 9.6% sequential increase in revenue, with our legacy modules business increasing $2.1 million, or 6.3%. Turns volume increased, rising to 40.5% of total shipments for the quarter, consistent with recent levels. Our Picor unit also recorded an increase in revenue of 34% off of a small base of merchant business. Picor is building the expected momentum with its line of high-performance PRMs and point-of-load regulators, which will be expanding this year and into the next. For Q2, the anticipated decrease in shipments by our VI Chip unit to its largest customer offset the increased shipments from the BBU and Picor. VI Chip's revenue declined by $4.4 million, reflecting the impact of the transition underway by our data center customer. As we have previously discussed, this customer is transitioning to our second-generation solution for powering Intel server motherboards. This solution consists of a chip VTM and a SiP PRM. As Patricio will address in a moment, during the second quarter, we began to receive the first substantial volumes of purchase orders for this second-generation solution. Concluding on consolidated revenue, recognized distribution revenue rose 8.1%, while international revenue declined 6.8%, reflecting the decline in VI chip shipments. Other than the decline in shipments to contract manufacturers of our data center customer, international revenue patterns by product and geography were within recent performance ranges. Vicor's consolidated gross margin for Q2 was essentially flat, both on an absolute and a relative basis. Q2 gross margin as a percentage of sales was 42.5% compared to 42.8% for Q1. The increased shipments from the BBU, along with a slight increase in average selling price and a slight decrease in average unit cost, contribute to an increase in the BBU's gross margin, which rose $2.4 million for the quarter. The BBU's gross margin as a percentage of BBU sales rose to approximately 46% from approximately 45% for the first quarter. While PICOR's merchant volumes are in their early stages, we are pleased with the performance of PICOR's fabless model, which recorded a gross margin of 54% for Q2. As the volume of PICOR's SIPs grow with our second-generation data center solution, PICOR's relatively high gross margin should have a positive influence on our consolidated gross margin. Unfortunately, for Q2, the performance improvement of the BBU and PICOR were offset by the further, although expected, decline in VI chip shipments. With low VI chip production volume, unabsorbed overhead costs precluded progress in our consolidated margin for the quarter. Turning to Q2 operating expenses, legal fees were still at a high level because of the cost of defending against infringement accusations in preparation for trial later this year. However, even though during the second quarter we included our annual company-wide merit adjustments to compensation, total operating expenses actually declined 2% sequentially. Total headcount was 1,019 at the end of the quarter, up from 1,009 as of March 31st. At the end of the second quarter of 2013, a year ago, total headcount was 997. G&A expenses, including legal fees, declined 11.5% sequentially, with the major contributor being the absence of fees associated with our year-end audit and Q1 filings. Marketing and sales expenses were essentially unchanged as reductions in several categories offset increased compensation. R&D expenses increased 3.8%, again largely due to annual merit-based salary adjustments, and incremental new hires. A few words about our Q2 tax provision. As discussed at length during previous calls, at year-end, we fully reserved against our deferred tax assets, which resulted in a $9.4 million tax provision for Q4 2013. A consequence of this accounting treatment is a near-term inability to create additional tax benefits on a book basis from additional pre-tax losses we incur. While we do have certain state and international taxes that factor into our reported tax provision, we are not showing in our GAAP income statement the type of tax provision one would usually associate with a quarterly pre-tax loss. Turning to new orders, second quarter bookings increased 14.6% sequentially. Total one-year backlog stood at $45.7 million at the end of Q2, increasing 10% sequentially, with 79% of this backlog scheduled for shipment during Q3. Cash flow from operations for Q2, despite the net loss, rebounded to a positive $2.3 million, up from Q1's deficit of $4.5 million, due to a $4.3 million net decrease in working capital, largely attributable to collection of receivables. Other current assets and liabilities were flat at quarter end. Capital expenditures for the quarter rose slightly to $1.9 million from Q1's level of $1.6 million, reflecting increased activity around meeting our capacity needs for chip production. As I've stated before, Earlier capital expenditure budgets have been refined, and we expect the cumulative dollar investment and the investment for 2014 will be lower than originally expected. We have been successful in repurposing resources to meet expected 2014 chip capacity needs. Turning to our consolidated balance sheet, our receivables portfolio remains in excellent shape, with day sales returning to below 50 days, ending at 47 days. Consolidated inventories quarter to quarter were essentially unchanged, with annualized turnover climbing to 4.25 times, representing a new high. There was no meaningful change to reserves. Cash and short-term investments stood at $51.5 million at the end of Q2, up from $51 million at the end of Q1. This figure excludes investment securities with a par value of $6 million carried on our balance sheet at an estimated fair value of $4.9 million, representing roughly 82% of par. Turning to our expectations for the third quarter, we are forecasting revenue of approximately $55 million for the third quarter, representing a sequential increase of approximately 4%. On a consolidated basis, we expect Q3 operating expenses, excluding legal fees, will be little changed. However, we are anticipating an acceleration of legal fees as we approach our expected October trial date. Now I'll turn the call over to Patricio.
Thank you, Jamie. As Jamie stated, Q2 was characterized by a significant reduction in VR chip revenues caused by the transition from VR12 to VR12.5. However, we are hopeful of being on the verge of a sustained ramping volume of chips and SIPs for VR12.5 applications and other systems. We're making progress toward expanding our share of board-level spend related to powering memory in addition to Intel processors. We believe this is an important development as it enhances our value proposition and competitive position. We're also making progress with data center computing customers for our differentiated 48-volt system, and our unique solution is gaining momentum with targeted prospects. Similarly, we're encouraged by the momentum building with customers across a range of industries and applications, notably in wireless communications, automotive, and transportation, where we've been concentrating our recent efforts. With the release of new chips and SIP products, we're pursuing a critical strategic goal of diversifying our base of markets, applications, and customers. I reaffirm the enthusiasm expressed at the recent annual shareholders meeting to achieve our strategic goal of leading a transformation of the industry toward modular solutions to power system requirements. With its intellectual property, know-how, and the arrival of cost-effective, high-performance modular building blocks, Vicor is very well positioned to make the most of this multi-billion dollar market opportunity. Turning to patent litigation, over the last 3.5 years, we've been defending against meritless infringement accusations brought by a competitor whose predatory actions and intellectual dishonesty involving claims to the intermediate bus architecture, or IBA, it cost us tens of millions of dollars in lost business and legal expenses. We remain confident that Vicor will prevail on the merits, but we note with irony that the competitor's behavior and its threats of litigation have caused customers to migrate at a faster rate away from IBA and toward FPA, our proprietary power distribution architecture, which offers efficiency and density levels far exceeding the inferior attributes of IBA. As such, migration away from IBA has caused the IBA market segment, for which our superior bus converters stand accused of infringement, to shrink to the point it now represents an immaterial fraction of our total revenues. It is in this context that we look forward to our case going to trial at the end of September or early October. This concludes my prepared remarks, and Jamie and I will now take your questions. operator.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you have a question, press star 1 on your phone. If your question has been answered or you'd like to withdraw, press star 2. Questions will be taken in the order received, and press star 1 to begin. Our first question comes from John Dillon.
Hey, Patricia and Jamie. Congratulations on the bookings increase. That's a really nice bump up from last quarter.
Thank you.
The going forward, you know, you gave us a little guidance on next quarter. I'm just wondering, for the next 2 to 4 quarters, do you expect continued increase in bookings and also revenue growth?
Generally, yes. We are looking forward as we get into 2015 to a number of programs that we've been working on coming to fruition. In one way of looking at it, in terms of revenues, bookings, and overall financial performance, we think of this phase as representing probably the end of what's been a relatively long tunnel. You know, we can see the light at the end of the tunnel. But as suggested by Jamie, we are looking at Q3 of this year as still being a lost quarter for us. As we progress from that into the fourth quarter and into 2015, we expect to be able to leverage our model, which I think, as you know, is very much dependent on incremental revenues in terms of profitability because of the fixed cost structure, or largely fixed cost structure associated with a good deal of the enterprise. So in terms of looking at the bottom line, we anticipate that the very high rate of legal expenses, which will be at its peak this quarter, to essentially subside to a relatively low level as of the end of the fourth quarter. That will make a significant difference for the better in terms of the bottom line. But more importantly, the expansion in revenues with a significant share of that dropping to the bottom line will get us into positive territory.
Mm-hmm. So the light at the end of the tunnel, it reminds me, you know, on a number of conference calls before, we've been, you know, hearing that, you know, it's a couple quarters out. This time feels a lot different to me, in particular, I think, because you have a cost card that you haven't had before in the industry and your market's a lot bigger. But I really wanted to get your input on that. Why is it different this time than the other times when you talked about the revenue and bookings going up in, you know, in a couple quarters? And, you know, can you give us a little bit more confidence on that?
I think we talked to some degree about these kinds of issues at the shareholders meeting. You know, I may be repeating myself to some degree here, but as discussed at the shareholders meeting, our VIA-CHIP technology and the VIA-CHIP products that have, you know, characterized Vicor's opportunity in terms of new customers, new markets, and potential growth over many years did not, in terms of its cost structure, support the broad market penetration that we were seeking. And what is different about today is that with the arrival of chip products, and you've seen a growing rate of new product introductions, and you'll be seeing that rate further accelerating in literally weeks and months to come. With those products, we are achieving a cost structure measured in terms of cents per watt that is far lower than we've had with our first-generation VIA chips. So whether it's data center applications or automotive applications or wireless applications or other kinds of applications, we're going to be able to leverage chips into more cost-sensitive applications while being able to enjoy margins that with first-generation VIA chips we were unable to deliver. We're beginning to see this with SIPs, as suggested by Jamie in his opening remarks, at the level already of mid-50s, and I expect that rate to go substantially higher over the next several months as the rate of production of those products increases. And likewise, I see similar opportunities for chips in a variety of functions, ranging from building blocks that span the AC source, DC source, high voltage, low voltage, at the variety of output voltages, you know, from front-end applications all the way to the point of load. So we believe we are, after having made major investment that has characterized the life of the company for the last 10 years in brand new technology, packaging platform, control systems, various engines, you know, all quite proprietary. We are well equipped at this point to address cost-sensitive market needs with very high-performance products that will be able to address those cost-sensitive applications with very high margins. And, you know, we're, you know, frankly, very excited about that. This excitement is supported by the reception we're getting, you know, from a growing multiplicity of customers in a multiplicity of end markets.
It seems to me, Patrizio, that the memory rail opportunity that you've won is really validation of everything that you've been saying, because what I think I'm hearing is you're winning an opportunity to power the memory in an x86 architecture, which in the past has really not been available to you because of the cost card, and now you've got that opportunity.
Well, I think that the proof has already been delivered with our powering the processors themselves, right? Because the processors themselves, in the competitive alternative of multi-phase back regulator, you know, has been a commodity market for as long as, you know, I care to remember. So, you know, our ability to penetrate processors, Intel processors in particular, which are obviously very different type of devices from, let's say, the IBM processors of high-end servers that characterized, you know, our first-generation VIA chip entry. With Intel processor, we already demonstrated that we can play in a cost-sensitive portion of the market where the opportunity for growth is far greater if all the conditions are right. And those conditions involve, you know, a performance measured in terms of efficiency and density that delivers a certain value proposition to a customer that is, though, view of the higher efficiency and density, still very mindful of the cost card.
That's great. It sounds really good. I think we're pretty close. I think we're here. I'll get back in the queue. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, great. Our next question comes from Jim Bartlett.
Yes, Patrizio, you mentioned diversification. Could you address that a little bit more, how important it was? One, in getting more data center customers, which and give us maybe some timeline on when the prospects for that will happen. And then two, I haven't heard you mentioned wireless and transportation auto, which I hadn't heard you mention wireless before, and the transportation auto I always thought was, you know, way out there. Could you address those two questions? Thanks.
Yeah, so starting with data center applications, we are seeing the same level of motivation in with other data center customers that are very conscious of their total operating costs, the energy costs, you know, the efficiency that can be had with, you know, a 48-volt infrastructure with direct 48 to the point of load processor voltages and memory voltages, and those same compelling rationales are, you know, visible to, you know, a growing multiplicity of customers and potential customers. You know, turning to other opportunities, we are beginning to get some meaningful traction in automotive in Asia with our DCMs, and these are chips that we recently introduced, and we're looking forward to being able to build on that with new DCM entries that are scheduled, that are in the works and scheduled to come out in the foreseeable future, which will further raise the performance bar and further reduce the cost card very significantly. We've discussed in the past AC input products, and specifically the PFM, and there again we have gotten traction with opportunities such as microcells with our first generation PFM. You know, we're on the verge of introducing next generation PFMs that will increase the power capability while reducing once again the cost structure of the product significantly. We're also combining that with the introduction of a system-level packaging technology that is going to be referred to as APT, A-P-T. It's proprietary packaging technology to deliver complete system capability. And we, again, look at that as delivering the right combination of, you know, density, efficiency, and cost effectiveness that will, you know, add momentum to, you know, the early traction and interest that we got them in, you know, some of the markets you referenced.
Well, the latter two with the auto and AC, I mean, is this revenue for, like, 2016?
No, it is going to be some revenue in 2015. It's hard to assess a precise level for that, but it involves a multiplicity of competing, you know, companies in Asia. These are not ultra high volume applications; they are lower volume applications, but there's more than one of them, and we'll see as we get into next year what they will adapt to.
And would you expect a more data center customers? Is that something that happened this year or in 2000?
It's not going to happen this year, but there are things in the works on a variety of fronts. So when it comes to, let's say, powering memory, and there was reference to that earlier, or powering other type of point-of-load devices, we're also making inroads on other fronts because the issues of the data center are really not unique when it comes to power systems. They're not unique to data centers. So there's an opportunity not just to go across the competitive landscape in that end market, but there's also an opportunity to grow across from that end market to other markets with similar kinds of issues and challenges. I mean, remarkably, we're seeing for, I would say, the first time from very large potential customers, a motivation, a strong motivation to adopt the kind of power component methodology that Vicor has uniquely advocated for many years, but for which we have not had, you know, the wherewithal in terms of having all the necessary building blocks and, most significantly, having them with cents per watt figures of merit that are attractive enough from a cost perspective.
Okay, one other issue. Could you just address, I guess you said the distribution was up 8%. I assume that's sequentially that Jamie mentioned.
Yes.
Could you just address more where you are in this distribution strategy? It's perhaps been a little grown a little less than originally anticipated, and any changes in your thoughts about it, or sort of the inflection point of when that might accelerate?
So we put the infrastructure in place. I think there's been progress. I think the, in terms of an inflection point or accelerating the rate of progress, we are counting on new products from Picor and VHF to make a major impact on acceleration and inflection with respect to the share of revenues that are going to be provided through distribution, because these products, unlike our earlier generation products, bricks and other kinds of legacy products, are extremely well suited for distribution. You know, PICO regulators being a prime example of that, but also a variety of chips, PFMs. So all of these type of devices lend themselves to a distributor or distributors acting as intermediaries to customers, wishing to configure and implement a power system or subsystem or complete system in a relatively short time frame from devices that can be purchased from stock for overnight delivery.
So could you see that, is this a 2015 event where you could see some see acceleration?
The PICO regulators, have been to some degree a 2014 event. I think as we approach the latter part of this year, there's going to be new major product introductions from PICO that greatly extend the range of capabilities of our unique ZVS regulator product line, with back boost, and back entries over time coming out at different power levels. Again, these are well aligned with distribution channels as an effective way to get products to customers. As I suggested earlier, we are on the verge of introducing our 6123 PFM chips in adapter packages, and those again are prime candidates for distribution as an effective means of getting the products into the marketplace.
Thank you.
All right, we do have another question from John Dillon.
Hi, Patrizio. I'm trying to get a little sense of the total available market to you, and I know that's really difficult, but one example is Intel came out with their numbers, and they said their processor numbers for their, high-end, for their servers, their data centers, was about $35 billion. So I'm wondering, what percentage would be available to Vicor? Like, for every dollar of processor, is it 10 cents for power supplies? Is it, is it 20 cents, or is there a rule of thumb or a ballpark you could give us?
Well, it depends on what share of the power system we have, and I think as earlier discussed, we're working to expand that share. So I think...
let's say just for argument, just the processors, if you're just powering the processors, would it be 10 cents on the dollar? Would it be 20 cents on the dollar? Just a rough number?
When we talk about it in terms of just dollars per processor, and I'm going to be purposefully vague because, to state the obvious, I don't want to give a target to competitors to shoot
sure.
at. So, just as an order of magnitude estimate, which would be by definition off one way or the other by a factor of two or three, just to give you sort of an order of magnitude estimate, which I believe is what you're looking for.
Yes.
For a processor, depending on the kind of processor, the power system solution could be, let's say, at the ballpark of $20.
Okay. So $20 per processor, and that's just the
processor. As a ballpark, okay.
As a ballpark, and that's not the memory rails either.
Well, now you're trying to pin me down, and I just, I'm not going to go there. I'm just going to
okay,
give you
okay.
just to assess as an order of magnitude the opportunity. So
right, okay.
What's most significant with respect to this in terms of the actual opportunity is the ability to penetrate across, as suggested earlier, a multiplicity of customers in a multiplicity of end markets. And mm-hmm. we are executing on a strategy to accomplish that with reference designs that are going to enable a larger multiplicity of customers to leverage our solutions. There's a great deal of interest in the marketplace for a number of good reasons, ranging from performance to other reasons, for customers to embrace our solution. And as you can imagine, we are working and partnering with leading companies in that space to facilitate, through reference designs, the adoption of our power system type of solution. And we may have announcements with respect to developments on the general front later this year.
Are you teaming with Intel where they're actually promoting your product because you've got the best solution for powering their chips?
I can't comment with respect to any specific company or initiative.
And I can't remember if I asked this question already, but your gross margins as a percentage of revenue going forward, do you expect to see those to continually step up? I think I heard the opening comments, you expect next quarter to be up because of the PiCore stuff, but do you expect it to continually to go up here for the next several quarters?
Well, so at the risk, again, of stating the obvious, I've invested $250 million in round numbers in the enabling technology at the foundation of chips and SIPs. We want to see a return on that investment. We're very focused on that. And that gets measured, first of all, in traction with customers, revenue growth, but significantly a margin level, a profitability level that is commensurate to the level of investment we made in the technology. So the good news in this regard is that we finally, with SIPs first and chips second, gotten to proper platforms that can support the low cost structure that enables our customers to have the competitive pricing they seek, while at the same time enabling us to achieve a return on investment by way of a healthy margin. The making of a win-win situation for our customers and for ourselves.
So you do expect the gross margins as a percentage of revenue to continue to go up for the next several quarters?
Let me answer it this way. I know I'm repeating myself, but in the early days of our brick power component paradigm, I'm now going back to the 80s, early 90s, Vicor enjoyed margins in the 60-65% range routinely. To develop the product line, we didn't spend nearly as much as we've invested in every way. It's not just dollars, but inventive sweat, you know, whatever you want to call it, to develop the technology, platforms, intellectual property that is at the foundation of SIPs and CHIPs. So we would definitely expect to see a return on investment measured in terms of margin that is at least as good in time as we've seen historically with our BRICS.
Sounds great. Thank you very much. Looking forward to better results. This sounds great. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. And it looks like there are no further questions in queue.
Thank you. We will be talking to you in approximately 3 months. Have a good day.
This concludes today's conference. You may disconnect and have a great day.